Tax session number 28672, Mr. Tony Bradbury, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Bradbury?
I was born on the 30th of April, 1925, in Hampstead, London.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background? Were your family living in Hampstead?
My family was an old established Hampstead family. My father lived in Hampstead all his life. His father had moved from Markgate Street in Hertfordshire in the 1840s, and he was a foreman bricklayer and built the house where I was born and where my father was born.
And what did your father do for a living?
Well, my father was on the stock exchange. He left school when he was 14 and he went to work on the stock exchange. And he worked all his life, except for the interval of the First World War and, of course, the Second World War.
Did he serve in the First World War? Or
yes.
What was he in?
He was in the Territorial Force from 1913 onwards. He got introduced to the Territorial Force because he went with his father on an expedition from Towerbridge to Yarmouth on a steamer. And he got talking to another stock exchange man who said, why don't you join the Hertfordshire Yeomanry? And my father thought, that's a good idea, you know, spurs, good uniform, all the rest of it. He was only 21 at the time. So he was introduced to the London troop of the Hertfordshire Yeomanry. He joined and did a year's training with them before the First World War broke out. And when the First World War finally did break out on August the 4th, 1914, he was immediately summoned back to his regiment and spent about a month wandering around Hertfordshire and East Anglia doing various different jobs before, I believe, Kitchener finally decided to send them off to Egypt to replace troops who were already stationed there. So he went to Egypt in September 1914. He joined his regiment replaced the 3rd Carbineers, the 3rd Dragoon Guards, and he was out in Egypt for until December 1916, when he contracted malaria. He got it so bad that they sent him back home.
He didn't serve in Gallipoli then?
I'm not sure.
You weren't born, so I mean, it's all family history.
I think he didn't mention Suvla very much, because a lot of the yeomanry regiments that were stationed at in Egypt, they got sent to Suvla for the third and last offensive, really.
So he came back in late 16.
He came back in late 16, and when he recovered, they put him into the Scots Greys. And he arrived at the Scots Greys and took part in the Battle of Cambrai. And after that, he was sent to Gough's Fifth Army with his regiment. And he formed part of the cavalry divisions who were meant to reinforce Gough. And his most vivid recollection of the war is the March Retreat of 1918. I've got it here. I've got his memoirs here about that time. So if any time you want to read them, they are at the Imperial War Museum, because when he died, I sent them a copy. So if you want to read...
So his name was, what's his first name?
Bradbury. Arthur Walter, his first name.
Okay. Now, I presume you were in reason... That's his military career, and he came back and resumed as a stockbroker.
Well, with great difficulty, because when practically everybody in the country expected a short war, and they said, oh, well, yeah, fine... There was quite a common thing for people on the stock exchange to join yeomanry regiments. They said, well, okay, well, it won't be long. When you come back, your job is open for you. But of course, nearly 5 years later, it wasn't. So he had a bad time getting re-established in civilian life. I think that rather disillusioned him. So, plus the fact that I think that, from what I've read about the general state of things in the country, the demobilisation was a chaotic shambles, really. And people were getting demobbed who had only been in a short time, and because they were minors, they got released quicker. And it was nothing like as efficient as the demobilisation after the Second World War.
Now, so he'd be getting back into steady employment just about the time you were born, in 25.
Well, because the economic situation was up and down, he was always in and out of a job. For instance, he'd be out of work for 6 months. He'd have a job in September. And in Christmas, the firm would pay him £100 bonus. It was that sort of job.
So it was still on the stock exchange, but intermittent.
Oh, yes, intermittent, yes.
And how did this affect your sort of life, where, you know, when you came around and when you started? Because you must have been about five when the Great Depression and things like that.
Well,
how did
yes.
it affect your life in Hampstead?
I can remember that it caused my mother a considerable anxiety, the uncertain income. She was always wondering if, when Father came home on Friday, he was going to tell her that the firm had shut up and they'd just all got the sack or something like that. That happened several times. I don't think there's any fault of my father's, because he was quite good at his job, and they used to let him go onto the floor of the stock exchange to conduct business when he was in work. But it was a very sudden shutting down of business. The firm was, the firms were always either looking for people desperately, like in September, or giving them the sack, or giving them all the sack in March. That sort of life.
But he managed to maintain the same house, though. You never had to move, or
we never moved from the same house, and I left that house to go into the Navy at the age of 18.
Now, tell me about your education. What was your first school? What do you remember of your education?
Well, I went to a school called Bartram's, which was a Roman Catholic convent school, till I was seven.
Were you a Roman Catholic family?
Yeah, well, we still are, actually. Yes. So,
now, what kind of an education did you get there?
From nuns. Need I say more? Highly religious, but not too much in the way of general education. Because all boys had to leave at the age of seven, whereas girls could stop on till they were 11. And my sister actually did.
So but after that, start?
I went to another Roman Catholic school at St. Dominic's in Kentish Town, Haverstock Hill. St. Dominic's Priory, Haverstock Hill. It was a newly opened primary school attached to the priory there. But I didn't care for it very much.
Why not?
They were a rough lot. I was always having to fight to keep my end up, so to speak.
How did you do there educationally?
Not very well.
What were you what did you have problems with?
All sorts of things, mainly the teachers.
So it wasn't the subject, it was the way you were taught and the environment.
Well, the environment was a bad one. Some of the female teachers there were, I think, psychopaths, if I can put it that way.
In what way?
Well, there was one I remember particularly, Miss Nash. She used to get into uncontrollable rages, and she'd have her particular bete noire out in front of the class and give them a good flogging with a ruler. And that was not really what I would like at all. You know, I didn't like it at the time.
How long did you stick this out?
Year and 9 months.
And then where were you sent?
I went to New End School, which was very much closer to where I lived.
Another Catholic school?
No, that was a sort of a Church of England school, but very, very tolerant about other faiths.
Now, how did you do there?
Quite well, because I won a free place to the Regent Street Polytechnic from there.
And what were you going to study at Regent Street Polytechnic?
Well, a general secondary education of that era of 36. I went there in 1936, and I did the general subjects, French, history, maths, English. And I did better at history and English than I did at maths and French.
And you were there from 36 to when?
Till 39, till the war broke out.
And now, stepping aside, so you're chuntering away at your education there, what about big hobbies or sport or anything like that? Were you interested in sport?
Not very much. And at Regent Street Polytechnic, the sports ground was at Chiswick, which was quite some way from Hampstead. And my mother said, we can't really afford to pay your fare there every weekend on a Saturday to go and play sport. Why don't you get a job? So I did.
Now, what did you do as a part-time job then?
The Hampstead Bakery, delivering bread.
And tell me about that. What was that like?
I quite enjoyed that, because it first awakened my interest in the Navy, because it was a German firm which narrowly escaped being looted during the First World War. The original owner changed his name quickly to an English name. The son, after the war, went into the RMVR and became an officer at HMS President. And he was very interested in the Navy, and he was always trying to get his male employees to join up as, you know, various types of ratings. And of course, being more of a paternal firm than you find these days, a lot of them did. And they used to tell me all about their sort of experiences in the RMVR, in between intervals of delivery bread, that is. And I got quite interested in the Navy as a result.
And did you have any other hobbies?
Let me think, hobbies.
Or big pastimes that you spent your time doing?
Well, not really. I used to spend most of my time reading, actually. Yeah. Spare time, that was. And I got an interest in history very early, particularly naval history. And I used to have long chats with the son of the owner of the bread firm. And he got me quite interested in the general run of things in the Royal Navy.
Now, what were you going to do when you left school? You'd be 14 in 1939. So
I was 14 in 1939. But when the war broke out, I was supposed to stay at school till 16, then take a matriculation exam.
Now, what happened when the war broke out then? Do you remember the day war broke out?
I do, yes.
Tell me about it.
Well, by that time, what had happened really was, my mother had said, I don't want you children all being evacuated to different places, because my school went off to Minehead in Somerset.
The Regent Street Polytechnic did.
The Regent Street Polytechnic went off to Minehead. And my sister's school went to Kettering. And so somehow she worked the oracle with the nuns that we'd all get my brother, my younger brother, who's about 18 months younger than I, we'd all go off together to Kettering to be evacuated. Well, we arrived at Kettering Station.
Now, when did that happen? Before the war broke out?
We arrived at Kettering on the morning that the Germans invaded Poland. September the 1st.
Now, tell me about the evacuation procedure before we come to the actual day war broke out.
Well, it was quite good, actually. We all had to assemble at my sister's school, issued with a certain amount of food and gas masks in cardboard boxes. and sufficient clothing to keep us going. And we got on the train at King's Cross. My mother saw us off.
How did you feel?
Glad to get away from home. Finally. As most young men do, actually. I thought this is a new start and a new adventure. That's my main preoccupation. And being insensitive as I was then, I didn't realise the effect it was having on my parents. But we got on the train, arrived at Kettering not too late in the morning. It's only about 70 miles from London. And we then got put into a yard where a lot of people came in and sort of picked us out to be house guests, so to speak.
Now, who were you picked out by?
I can't remember her name now, but she was quite a good woman, and her husband was a railway guard. And he was a very strict Methodist, and he would always turn out immaculately on a Sunday in his best suit and go off to the Methodist chapel. I believe he was a sort of a lay preacher.
And your sister was with you? Your brother?
No, we all went to different places.
So the idea of keeping you together and sort
yes.
of...
One evacuee who came to the same address as me was a German, actually, a German refugee called Rolf. And he had been chucked out of Germany with his family before the war broke out. And he was associated with the school as well. And Rolf and I, we lived in this house. I'm trying to remember her name now, but...
Now, how did they treat you? I mean, you know, because it's quite a difficult situation. Kids suddenly arrive
that's
and
right,
billeted
yes.
on you. How did you fit in? How did both sides get on?
Not too badly, because one of the things I was quite good at was playing draughts. And the gentleman of the house loved to play draughts as well. So we used to play lots of games of draughts. And I got on very well with him. He used to like going to football matches. So I used to go to football matches with him. This is after the war broken out, of course. And generally speaking, I got on pretty well. Mrs. James, that was right. That was her name, Mrs. James. She treated us pretty well, really, considering how... She'd had two people, quite strangers, pushed into the household. And I must say, they looked after us pretty well.
Now, what about homesickness? Was that a problem?
No.
Yeah, I thought not, from your reaction. Now, tell me about, so 2 days later...
The war broke out.
Now, do you remember that day?
Yes.
What happened?
I remember going up to the Wicksteed Park in Kettering to play. And... they said, listen to this broadcast, that somebody was going to have a radio there or something, and I heard Chamberlain say that war had been declared on Germany. You know, he said the usual things about this evil system that we've got to suppress, and I've got to tell you now, despite all our efforts, and Germany won't withdraw from Poland, we've got to declare war on Germany. And that's how I heard about the we were at war.
Now, how did you react? I mean, you were only 14.
14, yes. Well, I thought about it next morning was when Kingsley Wood said, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, he was asked for his opinion how long the war would last. Well, years later, I realised he was aping Kitchener a bit. He said, well, I think it'll last about 3 years. So I thought, I'll just miss all this. But no, it lasts a bit longer, as you know.
Were you sorry you'd miss it? I mean, did you have any idea as to whether you wanted to be in it or not?
Well, I wanted to join the Navy. And... after I got a bit fed up with being evacuated...
Now, hang on. What about your education? I mean, you were with this nun's school.
Yes, I went...
You were tagged on.
Yes, I went to Kettering Grammar School.
Was that? Did everybody go there? Did you join that school, or were you being educated in their premises?
No, I was picked out to go there because I'd been to the Regent Street Polytechnic.
And how did you settle into Kettering Grammar School?
Quite well, really. Except for one or two of the masters were a bit funny, but generally speaking, the masters were pretty good.
In what way were they funny?
Well, one bloke said to me, why don't you go home? So I said, well, I can't. There's a war on. Richard improved matters very much. So, but most of them were all right. One was a bit of a realist because a bit later on when we went into Norway in response to the Germans' attack on Norway, this master would come in looking very gloomy and say, it's all been dressed up, but I think we're getting a good hiding, which didn't please the other masters or the headmaster very much and made him very unpopular for telling the truth, really. And I found out that later on that telling the truth is not always the best thing to do.
Now how did you, was your education disrupted or did you just fall back smoothly into it?
No, we used to, the Kettering Grammar School boys used to go in the morning and we used to go in the afternoons. And in the mornings we'd go and start digging for victory. I'd never wielded a fork or a spade in my life before, so that was a bit hair-raising to begin with.
Well, tell us a bit about that. So you were actually, you're involved in that sort of process of...
Oh, yes.
Where were you digging?
In a field not far from the school. We were digging the field up, ready to start planting.
How did you find it?
Quite good. I thought, this is good, you know, digging away and chucking earth around. I thought it was just the job, really. Not very skillful, but I thought I gradually got better. And there were one or two of the masters who used to come up there and supervise us. And in the end, we dug up the whole field between the lot of us, really.
And do you know what they planted?
Potatoes later on in the spring. I think they tried to plant some green stuff in the autumn. You know, Brussels sprouts, all that. I don't think they're very successful, because I think they're a bit too late. But I think that the spring crops are all right, such as potatoes, this sort of thing. And it seemed to be doing a bit for the war effort, so I was quite happy.
How are you getting on with the local boys and girls? You know, because you're Londoners.
Oh, quite good, because I've got a couple of good friends in the... in the school, and they treated me very well. I think they were sorry that somebody had to be chucked out of their house and home in London because of the war. But
there was no local regionalist rivalry or anything there? No.
Not really. I never detected that, no, except for that particular master.
Now, how long were you there for? I mean, what...
Well, the war dragged on, as of course you'll know, and when it went very quiet, and it was the phony war, and I thought, well, you know, there's not much point in me stopping here. I might as well go home and try and get a job, because I could see that half-time education was not doing any good, really. So I wrote home in May 40 and said, I think I'd do better at home. And much to my surprise, well, I said, yes, come home. So without more ado, I got on the train and went home.
That's May 40.
May 40, yes.
Now, what work were you to do?
Well, I was going to look for a job as in engineering, actually. I was quite interested in engineering, so I was going to look for a job in that. And I couldn't find one straight away, so I went back full-time as a delivery boy for the Hampstead Bakery. By this time, the sun had gone off to the war, and they were desperately short of people. So I did a delivery job for them for... I think it'll until the November.
Now, by that time, can we talk a bit about sort of some of the effects that the air raid thing? What about air raid precautions? I mean, did you have an air raid shelter in Anderson or anything in Houston?
No, we had not in the house. Outside in the road, they put up a concrete surface shelter.
Now, can you describe that? Because there are not many of them left now.
No, it was, let me think, about 80 feet long, about 10 or 12 wide, about 7 feet in height, if I remember rightly, and it had an entrance at either end. And inside there, you just sort of took your bedding in and dosed down where you could.
Were there bunks or still?
No, nothing. You just
floor.
Just the floor, really.
Now, what was its construction? I mean, how thick was the bricks? What was the roof?
It was all concrete.
Just a concrete?
Yes, structure. Built on the surface of the road.
And a flat concrete slab, then, on the roof? Or?
No, it was just done in one big solid mess. They came and put this thing up with a load of concrete. I wasn't there at the time when they actually built it, because they did it when they were expecting air raids to start straight away in September 39. And they came and built this thing in a bit of a hurry. But they built concrete surface shelters all over Hampstead, really.
And was it a flat roof?
Roof, yes.
Now, what was it like in there?
A bit claustrophobic, because when we finally came to use it, in September 40, first of all, people used to go down Hampstead Tube, which was considered the safest place in London, being so deep. My mother and father used to go down there quite a bit, and there they did have bunks on the station platforms built alongside the wall. And people used to go down there, and there used to be lots of quarrels about, I had this bunk yesterday, but we're not getting it tonight, that sort of business.
And did you ever go down there?
For the first 10 nights.
And what was it like in there?
Bloody awful.
Why?
Well, all this quarrelling between people disputing over who should have the bunks and who should sleep on the platform. And the trains were still running, of course, at the same time. And,
what were the bunks like?
Well, there was like the sort of bunks that you used to get, you know, these prisoner of war bunks that you see in...
Two up.
And these bunks were all along the... I think every railway station in London have an underground anyway. And they were all alongside the wall. Except, of course, for the entrances to the people who come down and join the trains or get off.
And which way were they facing? They'd be flat against the wall.
Flat against the wall, yes.
And not sticking out.
Oh, no, there wouldn't be enough room for that. No. They're flat against the wall. And if you couldn't get a bunk, you either had to doss down on the station platform or go somewhere else in the tube. In Hampstead, it's pretty safe because it's it's the deepest tube in London, actually, being on Hampstead Hill. So if you couldn't get a bunk, you just had to settle down for the night, either in the approaches to the platforms or at the base of the lift shaft or something like this.